and also in the court is the general counsel of Joseph A. Bank, the closers, Charles Frazier, the associate general counsel, Kathy Spicer, and Kristen Strain, also from Venable.
And welcome to the court.
Thank you very much.
Good morning. May it please the court, Brian Long from Rogrodsky & Long. I rise this morning to introduce my co-counsel, Carl Stein from Wolf Popper. Mr. Stein's previously been admitted pro hac vice. With the court's permission, he'll present argument this morning.
Thank you. Welcome, Mr. Stein.
May it please the court. In this Books and Records action, the Court of Chancery granted summary judgment to defendants, denied summary judgment to plaintiffs. We think that the court was wrong on both counts. Plaintiff has met all the statutory requirements of a Books and Records action, the technical requirements. We put forward a proper purpose that we think easily meets the credible basis standard, and we have asked for a narrow scope of documents that is directed towards purposes that we stated.
Can I stop you right at the outset? You got a substantial amount of documents, did you not?
We got some documents, Your Honor. We got the...
You got a report and all the exhibits to the report and some minutes of meetings to set up the independent committee, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay. What is the specific purpose and what are the specific documents that you didn't get?
Your Honor, the purpose, the plaintiffs here stated three purposes. The first purpose, the primary purpose, is to investigate wrongdoing on the part of the board. The court below determined that the documents that were provided according to the Court of Chancery said, as in Grimes, Norfolk has received documents that should suffice for the purposes of establishing or raising reasonable grounds for suspicious about a special committee's independence, good faith, and due care. I think this sentence demonstrates, Your Honor, that the Court of Chancery used the wrong analysis here. The court was looking at a purpose that was not the purpose that was stated by plaintiffs. Plaintiffs' purpose was to investigate wrongdoing, and the court determined that the documents we received were appropriate for looking into the independence of the special committee.
Well, okay, but I'm still wanting to know what particular purpose, but you know, what particular wrongdoing you want to look into, and as to that purpose, what documents do you not have that you requested that you think go directly and are necessary to investigate that purpose?
Okay. As alleged in our complaint, there was an announcement by Joseph A. Bank that they had missed a quarterly result. The stock dropped significantly. A series of securities fraud cases were filed, and in that case, that securities fraud case, the federal judge upheld the complaint two times, first on a motion to dismiss and then on a motion for judgment on the pleadings. And in that action, there was securities fraud that was alleged in terms of misrepresentations of material fact primarily having to do with the company's inventory, and also there was allegations of insider trading, many millions of dollars by the company's CEO. So what we did in our complaint was we requested documents that were narrowly tailored to the issues that the federal court found compelling there. And when I say that they were narrowly tailored, we asked only for board materials relating to certain subjects that had primarily to do with inventory, but also to do with the accounting related to that.
And how is that different than the information you received?
Well, the information that we received was the Special Litigation Committee report, one of the categories that we asked for had to do with investigations done by the board, but what we received was not the board materials related to all those.
But what I'm asking is the special committee report and its exhibits.
Right.
Did that address any of these securities violations?
Your Honor, the report itself dealt with the issues that were in the securities fraud case. That was the report itself. And some of them dealt with some of the issues that we were looking into, but what it means to us was that we got a report and documents that were chosen by a committee of the board rather than the court looking to see whether our purpose, which was to investigate wrongdoing, whether the documents that we requested were essential to that purpose. So in other words, what happened was the board itself, the board committee, made a determination of what documents are essential rather than the court doing that.
So your complaint here is that you got all the information that an independent special committee considered important to an investigation of the same types of problems, but you didn't get to see anything else that maybe this independent committee didn't consider important to look at.
Well, I think that the Special Litigation Committee, they did a report and they attached certain exhibits, but the documents that they attached were not for the purpose of R220 action. They didn't, first of all, they weren't for the purpose of R220 action. They were for the purpose of putting a report together that may or may not comply with their obligations as a special litigation committee. But those are separate obligations than to determine under Section 220 what is essential to our proper purpose, which there definitely may be overlaps. But under 220, under Section 220, it's the Chancery Court's obligation to make a determination of what's essential. And here, if we just are given what the Special Litigation Committee determines are the proper documents, then in essence, the court is.
Counsel, you're giving a very convoluted, lengthy answer to what I thought was a very sharp, simple question. You were given documents that were considered by the SLC. You want additional documents. What we're trying to figure out is how do you characterize those documents? And the question you were asked was, do you want the universe of documents that you requested other than those that were considered by the SLC? And if so, why are they essential and sufficient?
Okay. Well, what was given to us by the SLC were not all the board materials related to the categories that we set forth in the complaint that had to do with the issues that the federal district court found compelling when it upheld the complaint twice. So while the SLC report and the exhibits certainly are documents that we wanted to get and are part of a group that is essential to what our proper purpose is, it is not the entire group of documents that would be essential to those to that purpose. So,
well, I understand that is your legal position, but the question is why aren't the documents that you were given essential and sufficient, given the fact, given the procedural history of this case, including the process that the SLC followed?
Well, I think there's two answers to that. First of all, they're a subset of what we believe are essential, and we think that there are more documents that are essential, and these documents definitely concern our investigation. That's the first part of that. But the second part of it is that the court below made a determination that those documents were essential to a purpose that was not our purpose, and that's the independence of the special committee. So the analysis that the Chancery Court did was not the analysis of taking the our purpose and making a determination of whether our purpose is proper or not, and then determining what documents are essential to that purpose.
So you articulated three purposes in your demand, but the second and the third we can ignore, and you're focusing on the first.
Well, the first of investigating wrongdoing is certainly...
Is that right?
I'm sorry. Well, I don't think you can ignore the other two, Your Honor.
Well, we have a hodgepodge here.
Right.
You're either relying on all three or you're not. If you're not, which one are you relying on?
Well, Your Honor, we believe that all three that we've stated are proper purposes.
That may be, but that doesn't mean you're relying on them. That is that you're putting your stake down and, asking the court to rule based on all three or only two out of the three.
Well,
keep on talking about investigating mismanagement, which is fine, but that leaves the question of what about these other two purposes?
Okay, well, the second purpose is to determine whether the board can independently review a demand, and the third is to take other steps. I mean, I think that the third really is a question of when we obtain documents, what we'll end up doing. So if the documents show a certain level of wrongdoing, then one of our purposes is to determine whether or not it would be appropriate to file a derivative case, and the second one is also connected to that too. If we determine that the documents show that the board can...
So you're relying on all three?
Yes, Your Honor. We're definitely relying on all three. We're not giving up on any of them.
Now, you have taken the position that all of the documents that you requested, including the documents that you received, are essential and sufficient to all three purposes, correct?
I'm taking the position that those documents are part of a group that are essential.
I'm sorry. I'm asking you a legal question. Okay. Can you just give me a yes or a no?
And what's the question, Your Honor? I'm sorry.
That all of the documents that you received, plus the documents that you didn't receive, are essential and sufficient to all three purposes in whatever proportion may exist.
Yeah. Yes, Your Honor.
It is one thing to say that, and it's another to demonstrate it. At what point did you try to demonstrate that to the trial court? Which found, by the way, that you had not demonstrated the essentiality or sufficiency of the documents that you did not get.
Well, Your Honor, I think that we demonstrated that by submitting to the court the decisions of the federal court that found certain factors and certain issues compelling when it...
Well, did you present to the trial court a precise, pinpointed discussion of each category of documents that you were looking for?
We didn't, no, Your Honor, we did not.
And you didn't do it before us either, did you?
No, Your Honor. I think that what we did do is we listed the issues that, I think specifically listed the issues that were compelling, that we believed were compelling to the federal district court, and I think that the categories of documents that we listed are pretty clearly related directly to those issues. So,
I'm curious. In your view, having stated a proper purpose, let's assume that you've stated a proper purpose. Is it your view that under Section 220, you're entitled to the same extent of documents that you would get in discovery if this case were litigated?
No, absolutely not.
So I guess what Justice Jacobs and I are both trying to discover from you is there is some minimum amount of documents which, for a proper purpose, you are entitled to get under Section 220.
Right.
You got some documents, but you say it doesn't meet that minimum of being necessary and essential documents. but we're both trying to discern specifically why some additional documents that hopefully you will identify for us, at least in terms of a category, why they are essential and why what you've got doesn't meet the same category.
Right. Well, I think that the obviously, but the case law indicates in Section 220 indicates it's certainly not the same level of document discovery that we would get in the litigation. So, but what the cases do talk about is if it's a situation where one of the outcomes would be to file a derivative action, that there certainly needs to be enough documents or enough of the documents provided to allow a plaintiff to state a claim in the derivative action. Now, we're not saying that we intend to
But tell me, so you're saying what you got so far is not enough for you to be able to state a claim in a derivative action?
Well, you know, I'm not certain of that, and obviously that could be tested in the future, but what I'm stating is that the documents we got were chosen, first of all, for a different purpose, and that's to be
but,
with...
But we don't really care how those documents got put together. What we care about is what did you get in the way of documents, and why was that not sufficient?
Right.
So forget whether it was done for one purpose or another, unless you're now going to attack the independence of the committee or whatever, but or the process by which they did their work, which I gather you're not. But if what you're saying is you want information that would allow you to file a derivative complaint, then what I want to know is what of the information that, compared to the information you did get, what additional information in your view is necessary in order to file a derivative complaint?
Right. And first of all, I won't concede that we not won't necessarily attack the independence of the Special Litigation Committee. And in fact, two of the...
But please, try and answer my question.
Right.
What additional information beyond what you were given would be necessary for you to be able to file a derivative complaint?
Well, first of all, I don't know necessarily because I don't know what documents there are out there. So I apologize if I'm sounding evasive on this, but first of all, we don't know what documents they have. Second of all, we've asked for a very narrow scope that are easily acquired. So what we would like are, so that it isn't chosen for us, is we would like the board materials for the categories that we set forth. And we think it's a very modest request. We think that the corporate secretary has easy access to this. There's no significant burden in doing this. And so if we got those documents, we would be able to see it. So for us to say what documents the Joseph A. Bank has that we would need without, it's pretty much the cart before the horse. We don't know what specific documents there are. We don't know why they were chosen to be in the SLC report.
But see, the problem is, at least from my perspective, having been given, maybe not a substantial in your view, but having been given documents that clearly address the issues you're concerned about, it then becomes a question, well, why should you get any more documents than that? And you say, well, because there may be more documents out there. But that's not the way it works.
Right.
So as much as you can tell me, well, we don't know what's out there, that's true. But you still have to be able to identify a category of document and explain why you need that in light of what you already have. And I'm trying really hard,
right,
but I haven't heard the answer to that.
Right. And I apologize again if I'm sounding evasive, but I think our position is that we have received some documents. The documents are part of a group that would be essential to this. And what we're asking for is that the documents that what we're asking for, we believe, is very modest. We think that what we've asked for is a reasonable group of documents to ask for, and for it to be decided by a committee of the board what documents are essential to our purpose is, we believe, is inappropriate, and we think that the judge below didn't really make that decision, but allowed the board to make that decision. So it's as if we made our 220 demand, and it's as if they decided what documents to send us, and in response, and when it was not their, it wasn't their responsibility to do that, but it was the court's responsibility to determine that. And I think that the defendants have put this in a kind of a in a burden versus reward situation.
Mr. Stein, you used up all of your time, including your rebuttal time.
Thank you, Your Honor.
May I please the court? One theme runs through the Vice Chancellor's opinion. The plaintiff is seeking to conduct its own investigation without mounting any challenge to the investigation already conducted by the Special Litigation Committee. The Special Litigation Committee had investigated the underlying facts. It even reviewed a prior contemporaneous investigation by the Audit Committee, which had retained Ernst & Young and Wilmer Hale in March 2006 to investigate the same underlying facts in response to an anonymous complaint from an anonymous shareholder. So the Special Litigation Committee looked at its own, looked at the prior investigation, determined to do an additional investigation, interview 40 plus more people, looked at those same facts, and the plaintiff has failed to articulate ever that anything about the SLC process was impeachable, failed to do that at the trial court level. The plaintiff litigated this case as if the SLC report had never been issued, as if the SLC had never been convened. Indeed, when the plaintiff's corporate representative was deposed, the client did not know about the SLC report or the SLC investigation until the day before the deposition, and was not able to articulate any reason why he could say why there's anything wrong with the SLC process, its good faith, its thoroughness, or the audit committee's process, its good faith or its thoroughness. So that's the factual context, the very particular circumstances which brought us, which were before the court when determining the cross motions for summary judgment. And I think there's two critical implications for appeal. First is the Vice Chancellor, having encouraged us to produce the entirety of what's called the basic documents in some of the prior case law, the SLC report, the exhibits to the SLC report, as well as the SLC minutes and the minutes creating the SLC, determined that that was enough. And that decision that that's enough is subject to abuse of discretion. We cited to the court two prior opinions of the Supreme Court about the abuse of discretion standard as applied to the scope of an appropriate inspection under 220. Indeed, it's not only this court's jurisprudence, it's in the statute itself, which recognizes that the Court of Chancery, in its discretion, decides what limits to impose on a request for books and records. So that's a discretionary finding, and there's no basis, there's no basis to challenge that discretionary finding.
You indicated the Vice Chancellor encouraged you to produce these documents, and you did. Is there any indication in the record that the other side said, well, they're not adequate, and here's why, or did they simply say we want everything we requested originally?
Now, from the trustee's part of the question, the plaintiff has always said we're entitled to everything we've requested throughout. Actually, we voluntarily gave them the report and said, by the way, there's a lot of exhibits. Let us know if you want the exhibits. And we never really heard back. And then we sort of made it official and tendered them to the record in the summary judgment phase, saying here are all the exhibits, and here are the minutes as well, and of the SLC. At some point, the Vice Chancellor suggested that would be a good idea not to revisit that question. So we produced the minutes as well. And
well, what I'm trying to get at with respect to the procedural posture is there a dispute of fact raised by the plaintiff that this was inadequate?
No.
Having examined them, did they articulate a factual dispute addressing inadequacy?
No, there's no, for instance, there's no testimony from the plaintiff, you know, as if this had gone to trial. There's no testimony saying here is my real purpose, my actual purpose, my factually based established purpose, why I want these documents. And this is why I need those documents. There's never been any any effort to make an evidentiary showing, either about actual purpose or how the document ties into that purpose. There's just been a blanket request for what's in the demand.
Right, Mr. Just to put this in, as you say, in context, the trial court held that, at least in these circumstances, the documents that the plaintiff had been furnished by your side was enough, unless the plaintiff could show that additional documents were needed. And I think that you'd omitted reference to the unless part. But then the court went on and said there has been no such showing. Is that?
That's right. I guess I'm alluding back to there was an oral argument about discovery in which the Vice Chancellor made clear about the import of the Grimes decision by Vice Chancellor Lamb and the Kaufman decision about a sufficient showing of need being required to go beyond what's been deemed basic documents to challenge an SLC's determination. And the plaintiff never, through affidavits or testimony in any fashion, or really even through argument, to try to itemize categories of documents and why they're needed. I don't think we've heard that this morning. So that's been a consistent approach through the case. And the Vice Chancellor had before him the documents we produced. We put those into the record. This is what we've given to the plaintiff. This is the report. These are the exhibits. And therefore, there's a basis for the Vice Chancellor to make a discretionary finding. These documents are sufficient. There's been no showing of need for why more documents would be appropriate. And the Vice Chancellor articulated different ways in which a plaintiff could conceivably make that showing in this case or another case. And it's certainly been done in other cases to say, is there something internally inconsistent about the report itself? Are there certain allegations in the federal securities complaint that are not addressed by the SLC report? Is there something missing here? There's been no effort, again, through testimony or through argument, to identify a missing piece of the report or any internal inconsistency with the report. And I think the Vice Chancellor made reference to accepted oral argument on the cross motions for summary judgment. That I think there was a question about independence, which I don't think was fairly raised below. The argument's been made here. And I think the Rule 8 problem would be enough to get beyond that. But the only question raised in the brief is about the independence of the special committee because it contains two members of the audit committee. How there can be a substantial threat of liability to members of an audit committee that contemporaneously investigated the same facts in March 2006 and relied on the advice of Ernst & Young and Wilmer Hale, and then got that vetted by the company's auditors at Deloitte.
But as I understand your brief, this was never raised with the Vice Chancellor at all, was it?
There's just some reference at oral argument on the cross motions, and I think that it was an effort to question independence, but the Vice Chancellor did not deem those to be appropriately argued below. And I think that the clear jurisprudence, if something's not briefed, it's waived. And there was no briefing, there was no affidavits, no presentation, fair presentation of argument as to independence below.
Mr. Friedlander, you introduced your presentation in words or substance by saying that the other side's presentation is being made as if there had been no SLC process and no SLC report.
Yep.
Are you suggesting that if there had been no SLC process or report, then the showing that the other side made would have been sufficient?
Well, I think that's an interesting hypothetical question, because in our research, we never found a case where you can walk into court based on someone else's federal securities law complaint, and that itself has been deemed credible evidence of wrongdoing sufficient to trigger 220. The case law where people have made out a credible showing have involved things such as a restatement of the financials, an SEC investigation, criminal proceedings. I'm trying to think of things in this area of the law. Here we have none of those types of facts. So, we never, because of the timing of the case, we never had to address the question of, here's a 220 demand saying investigate this accounting question because there's a federal securities law complaint.
Well, I'm not asking whether, as a legal matter, their showing would have been sufficient had there not been any SLC process. I'm only asking because the reverse of your statement suggests that if there had been no SLC process, then they would be home free. And I'm asking whether you agree with that or not.
No, actually, we oppose summary judgment, their motion for summary judgment, on the basis there was a fact question about whether they had a credible basis, whether they put forward a credible basis themselves.
So you're saying then that even if there had been no SLC process on this record, no showing has been made?
Yes, that's our position, and I think it would be an extension of the case law to find. I mean, this plaintiff has – it's really hearsay what's in that other – complaint, the federal complaint, which itself is based on purported confidential sources.
Well, it's my understanding the class action survived the motion to dismiss.
Correct.
And there was discovery.
Does
the record indicate whether that discovery was placed under seal or whether that discovery was accessible to the plaintiff in this case?
I don't know the precise answer. I mean, certainly the court papers are not under seal, there are court papers that are not under seal, including the opinion itself. I don't believe the plaintiffs have had access publicly in the ordinary course to the discovery in the securities law action. But there certainly has been that public information that complaint was out there a long time before this 220 case was ever filed. As far as the tools at hand, people sometimes skip the other tools at hand. There's the 220 process, and they've gotten documents through 220. There's public information generally, there's media.
That was the point of my question, that, it appears that if there's ongoing discovery in a companion class action litigation, that would certainly fit under the rubric tools at hand.
Right. But even the existence of the complaint would be a tool at hand. But frankly, there's a lack of, there's not much there. To build on. And I don't think that complaint's sufficient, but now they have those sources, and there's a failure again to mix and match. I mean, which is exactly what the special committee did when they're confronted with, they had a demand, a one-page or two-page demand, and they said, are you relying on anything more? And then that shareholder said, well, I'm relying on what's in that federal securities law complaint. So the special litigation committee took it upon itself to investigate everything in the federal securities law complaint. And this package we've presented them is, If you're interested in doing is finding out the truth about what happened, I mean, it's an incredible package of information in terms of it's because it reflects interviews, it reflects analysis, and it's not just board materials. It reflects things at the operational level about inventory, about promotions and emails about what does code red mean and outside.
One thing Mr. Stein said this morning is he just wants additional board materials that are readily available.
Right.
In light of everything you've produced, what's the reason for saying we're not giving you board materials that are readily available?
Well, we don't believe there's entitlement to rummage through the extent of any board discussion of the company's control systems or its audit papers or its any of its compliance procedures. I mean,
but if they're talking about wrongdoing, and those would indicate whether or not the board had properly discharged its oversight responsibility, and not discharging properly your oversight responsibility would arguably be a form of wrongdoing, why shouldn't they just get the minutes?
It goes beyond minutes, and it's not limited to the actual issues of inventory tracking and procedures. I mean, their request is beyond that, right? Really to any kind of financial audit controls on any subject. And I don't believe there's any law in Delaware about that you satisfy 220 by showing a lack of burden of a particular request. It has to be tied to the need and the purpose. And the fact there are always lots of documents that are either more or less accessible for a corporation, and there's nothing precludes one request to lead to another request, and you can just keep following that all the way along. And we thought this was a very fine line to draw ourselves because it was consistent with very pertinent precedent.
And your response is we should focus on the purpose, not the readily accessibility of your client to produce it, because that's not the test. It's whether they've articulated some credible basis.
Right. And really, but this case, it doesn't really present that abstract a question, because we have the situation where an SLC actually investigated the exact same conduct, and we gave them abundant information on the exact same issues that they purport to want to investigate. So it is contextual. There was a decision by the vice chancellor, and it's subject to abuse of discretion. So
and the vice chancellor talked quite a bit about the collateral estoppel effect of what happened in Maryland. What's your view on that and its relevance to what we're doing?
Yes, I introduced my remarks at one point by saying there are two implications from what the court chancellor did, and actually that was the second, which is all the briefing in this court about collateral estoppel or whether there's a separate purpose beyond a litigation purpose, I think is really beside the point, because it's not the holding of the court of chancery. There's some discussion of collateral estoppel law, and then there's one sentence which the court says, I think the plaintiff has been adequately represented by the prior plaintiff as well as the SLC. But then the opinion shifts on to talk about the SLC documents and the importance of the SLC documents and the lack of any challenge to the SLC documents and the need to make a further showing. And so what's really driving the opinion is all about the SLC.
You're saying, and tell me if I have this right, that there's conversation in the opinion about collateral estoppel, but no ruling.
Right. There's no legal ruling about collateral estoppel, which I think poses a de novo review issue for this court that would be a basis for reversal, because it's just not the holding that led to the denial of the request for additional documents. The discussion in the opinion, it's broken out in two parts. First was for purposes of a litigation purpose, talking about the importance of the SLC documents and the lack of challenge to those SLC documents. And then the vice chancellor very generously gave the plaintiff the benefit of an inference that maybe there's another purpose, even though they've never mentioned it throughout the litigation, what that other purpose could conceivably be, what action they might want to take other than potentially file a lawsuit. No mention of a proxy contest, no mention of a board meeting, or why we want to have a face-to-face, or no mention of any alternative plan of action. The vice chancellor nonetheless indulged the assumption that maybe there is a legitimate other purpose here, even though this was cross motions for summary judgment, 56H, there really shouldn't have been any inferences necessarily. And the court found there was no basis to get additional documents for any non-litigation purpose because there was no threshold showing. Excuse me. So really, I think all the discussion of collateral estoppel is not really an issue on appeal that would affect the judgment below. But no further questions. I'm clear.
Thank you. Thank you both. The court appreciates your argument. We'll take this matter under advisement and take a short recess.